guys, it is Tuesday, and welcome back to the Lauren Taylor Podcast. My name is Lauren Taylor. Today, I am extra cozy in all things airy, and I have Finley right next to me as well, too. We've been watching Frozen. We're about to see Frozen 2 on Friday, and I'm so pumped. Oh my gosh, I'm just going to be singing all the songs and really just being probably really annoying to Eddie. But I am so excited for today's episode, because today we have Cassandra, which, oh my gosh, you guys, okay, even if you go to her Instagram, like, I think you just get automatically just, like, healed from her positivity and just, like, all the things that she's doing. She's just overwhelmingly, like, inspiring and motivating for women who really want to have it all and who are trying to also, like, avoid the burnout, which is so me. And she's all about, you know, peace with their body and quieting their mind and reconnecting with their soul. And she's creating a lot of holistic rituals using food and meditation and self-care to really creating this sustainable success and genuine well-being within yourself. And I am just all about that. So I am so excited to dive into this episode. Let's get started. We dance, we sing, we live, we love tonight.
So good to be here.
Oh, thank you so much again. I'm so excited to just chat with you, pick your brain, and just, like, just share it all. So we get started, I know I shared a little bit about you, but I'd love for you to share just what you have going on right now and to kind of explain a little bit more about what you do.
Yeah. So what I have going on right now is I'm doing this program called Divinely You, which is actually like a perfect example of what I teach with women, right? So it's about healing the complicated relationship that you have with your body and your being so that you can step into your most confident, radiant, magnetic goddess self, right? Because I think what I've seen, I've been working with women right now for almost a decade, and one-on-one, started as a health coach and really healing people that had complicated relationships with their bodies, and then evolved into more of a spiritual mentor. But what I really saw was that I think so many women, especially women that are now like waking up and wanting to do their own thing in the world, wanting to create an impact, are being sabotaged by this relationship that they have with their body and their being. And it's kind of like what I call the root wound. And whether or not we think that, like, oh, we're not good enough because our body doesn't look the way, like, we thought a body needs to look for us to be successful in our industry, or a body should look based on something we saw growing up, or we just feel uncomfortable, or we're frustrated because we have some sort of, like, autoimmune rash or food allergy or whatever it is, right? It gets in the way of us standing in our truth of the fact that, like, we are goddesses and we are magnetic and we are here to be able to show up fully, right? To shine our brightest. And so with Divinely You, which is this program I'm doing right now, but also in all my coaching and on the Instagram and the podcast and all the other things that you see me give out to the world, it's really all about looking at this core relationship and how can we heal that part of us that thinks that we're not worthy or we're not good enough, or whatever it is, right? That holds us back and has us playing small on some level and has, its own insidious ways of sabotaging our finances or our love life or our work life. Right. So it's kind of getting back to the root and healing that core relationship so that, 'cause I really believe that as women, when we stand in our power and we remember our truth and we are like the goddess that we are, then things start flowing. Like love flows, money flows, work flows, because it's meant to flow. And sometimes we look at the branches or like the micro things, right? We look like, why isn't my love life working, and focus on that. Or we look at, why isn't my money working, focus on that. And in reality, a lot of times we get these quick fixes in the smaller categories. And instead I try to just get straight to the juice, you know, and heal it at that core place. Because when you change how you self-identify, then every area of your life changes.
Wow. Oh my God, you just dropped so many truth bombs. Nashville. I'm just like, wait, like, let me grab on to so many things that you said. Oh my gosh. Okay, so can you share, how did you get started with this? Like, I mean, you are obviously radiating so much women empowerment now, but what did it look like when you first began?
Yeah, so I think, one, I knew from an early age that I wanted to empower women to do whatever they wanted. Like, when I was little, I had a really difficult relationship with my mom, mm-hmm. who wasn't, like, very stable. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of my, like, coping mechanism as a little girl mm-hmm. was I would watch these E! True Hollywood stories, and I would think to myself, like, I can't wait. I need to have an E! True Hollywood story so that other little girls that are watching it can know that, like, they can grow up with a mom that doesn't love them or, you know, is, you know, has all this problems, right? And they can still make anything of their life, right? And, like, no one can tell them what's possible for them, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think from an early age, I had this, like, knowing that I didn't really even care, like, what I was successful in at that age, right? I was like, but I need to be successful to show other people that, like, you can be successful even if, like, no one else believes in you, you know? And then when I had disordered eating and a lot of problems with my body from a very early age. And then when I was in college and I got really sick, I started having all these food allergy symptoms and ended up having to get a bunch of blood tests and do that whole kind of thing. And mm-hmm. modern Western medicine couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. So I took it into my own hands and started doing, eliminating common foods that bothered people and taught myself how to cook and healed myself using food. Mm-hmm. And all my symptoms went away. And then that shifted my relationship with my body, which is a lot of the body work that I do, was when I got to that point where I wanted my body to be vital. Mm-hmm. More than I cared about what size it was. Mm. That's when, like, everything shifted. And debatably, from an outsider looking in, you could think that I ate even healthier, honestly, afterwards. But I was eating from a place of so much self-love. Mm-hmm. And the things that I was doing and the specifications I was following were because I wanted more than anything my body to have the chance to heal. Mm. And instead of it being from this place of, like, I'm going to eat, like, you know, fat-free cereal with fat-free milk or whatever because it's 10 calories or, you know.
Yes.
It was like, no, I'm going to eat Brussels sprouts and brown rice and I'm going to, you know, do this thing because I know that, like, my body can't heal on refined sugars, mm-hmm. right? And it was a completely different paradigm shift for how it was operating. And so that's kind of what got me started in this world, went to nutrition school, started my blog, eventually ended up coaching people, like, 5 years after I started my blog. And then spirituality came a few years later when my little brother got diagnosed with a terminal autoimmune condition, and he is stable right now. But we had a few years where his life was very much like surgery to surgery, and we were constantly worrying if he was going to make it. Mm-hmm. And things got real fast. Mm-hmm. And that, like, got me on my knees, connecting to a higher power, knowing that, like, that was my lifeline, mm-hmm. you know, to function. I was so sad mm-hmm. over what was going on and so frustrated about what was going on with him that my only, like, way to function in the world was to be meditating and praying and in constant conversation with God. And that was kind of when, you know, A Course in Miracles fell off the shelf and the Wayne Dyer and the Louise Hay and, like, all those books kind of started coming in. And I just, like, leaned on it so hard to get me through that time in my life. And so naturally my coaching shifted because I was like, oh wait, it's not just about the food. It's more than the food. And it's just more holistic. And so then I started talking more about the spirituality and that kind of all happened. And in the mix, I ended up being on a TV show on ABC with Anthony Bourdain doing cooking that they, like, randomly found me from YouTube when I was just doing my, I was literally doing it because it was the only thing that brought me joy. Wow. I was creating these, like, cooking videos in my kitchen back in New York, mm-hmm. because it was the only thing that when I was in a real bad funk with my brother mm-hmm. would like get me out of myself. If I felt like I could like teach these like three people that watch my YouTube channel how to make these like vegan cupcakes or whatever, like it just it was the only thing I could find that would lift my spirits. And I was like, forever, you know, we always talk about like that, like follow what lights you up or like follow your joy kind of thing in the spiritual world. But when you're really in a like a dark place, mm-hmm. you're like following your joy, like your life depends on it. Like you're like, what if anything makes me happy and how can I do more of it so I can just feel like human? And that's how that happened. I was like doing these horrible videos that were like, so, you know, you know, but yeah, that happened. And then the book happened after that. And it just kind of flowed because I was now realizing how much it had changed my life and just wanting to put it out there for other people.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Oh my, well, I'm so happy that your brother is stable now. I can't even imagine. My little sister, she went through, she only has one kidney, and I remember a period in time where she was in and out of the hospital and whatnot, and my parents were a wreck, and that was probably one of the first times where I had to really be, you know, strong for the family and whatnot, and didn't really deal with the emotions till afterwards, right? So, that whole situation's scary, so I totally get the grabbing onto something that really you want joy from, because it does become like your lifeline, like you said. And it's crazy in the best way that it like led you to landing on ABC and then the snowball effect of the book and like everything like that, like just like that pathway. So when those things started happening and whatnot, like how did that feel for you? Was it one of those things where you were like, oh my gosh, this is a dream come true? Or was it I still feel almost not necessarily in a rut, but like still feeling like I need to consistently pursue joy to get myself back up every single day.
Those things were great in, mm-hmm. Of themselves. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of stuff to process around having really good things happen in your life when someone you love is having really bad things happen, mm-hmm. or like what we would classify as good and bad, yes. let's say, yes. right? But it was hard to be like in such a privileged position when I was like getting flown out to LA to like film this stuff, yeah. knowing that my brother was still like going back and forth with stuff, mm-hmm. you know? You know, I dedicated the book to him, and there's a large section about his story and how it changed me in the book. But yeah, it was definitely a conflicting thing. You know, it still is. My brother's like still has, he doesn't have his large intestine or those kind of things. So he lives at, you know, he works at Google. He has a great job. He lives a relatively normal life, mm-hmm. but his quality of life is not like mine or yours, yeah. right? And he has a lot of things that he has to deal with on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. You know, just basic like eating and going to the bathroom stuff that's different than most people. Mm-hmm. So it's still something that I think I interact with on a regular basis, mm-hmm. that I think, you know, while I wish his situation was different for sure, and in many ways, it definitely does keep me really grounded about mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. And it puts things really in perspective for me, mm-hmm. In not taking any day for granted, above ground. And also just, you know, realizing, just showing up, right? Just being like, I have to show up, and I want to show up for all the people that can't, mm-hmm. you know? And what a privilege it is to just get to do what I do and to get to do what I love. And, but yeah, I still use all the tools. I think that is why, if I can toot my own horn, I think that is why I'm a good teacher.
Yeah.
Because I still use all of the things I teach, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I still meditate every day. I still have moments where I use, you know, EFT. I do rituals. I do all the things. I talk to my spirit guides. Now it's just a part of my life, mm-hmm. you know? And so I can talk to them as much on a bad day as a good day, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And it's something that they've become, like, it's become part of my mental support system, right? Mm-hmm. Where that's how I want to live my life. I don't sit down to, like, write a blog or record a podcast or or post an Instagram post without inviting in my spirit guides to like assist. You know, when I'm working with clients or I'm recording anything, I'm always like, channel through me, you know, like give, like help me say whatever the people that are listening to this need right now, and make sure that the conversation goes in that way. So I think that experience with him kind of like got me like doing the push-ups with it. So that now it's like second nature to just do that. And in that way, I'm grateful for that in that way, because sometimes it does take those harder periods where we really need, you know, to like do the work. Like for me, I knew that in that time, I didn't want to take, first of all, there's a difference between like sadness and depression. We don't need to go into that. But like, I knew I was sad. I wasn't depressed, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're sad when something like a very logically thing to be sad about happens in your life, right? Yeah, 100%. And so I didn't want to like take some medication or like do some sort of thing to like fix depression when I was sad, you know? And so for me, I knew that like meditation was my medication. Mm. It was my like happiness, you know, spirituality was my, you know, thing that helped me and still does help me cope with things that move through and process things in a productive way.
Mm. Yeah. And I can totally relate. And I think that what is so, resilient about human beings is that, you know, when we go through trials and tribulations and hard things, that just for us to be able to still have the strength to keep going, I've always found that so captivating. I've always found that just like, oh my gosh, like we never truly know how strong we are until we go through that thing.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I think when you have those, this is such a weird thing. I don't know if I've ever admitted this on a podcast interview before, but when I was little, I had this weird thing that I thought like people wouldn't respect me because I hadn't had a real struggle in my life. Oh, right. Cool. And the funny thing is that now, like looking back, like I actually experienced like a significant amount of childhood trauma, right? Mm-hmm. That I thought was normal because I didn't know anything else until much later on in my life, you know? But it was weird. I remember as a little girl thinking like, this like, you know, like, oh, these people that have these like epic stories, it's because they've really been through some stuff, you know? And I didn't realize that at the time I was going through some stuff that I didn't, you know, place. But even that, I do think that experience and everything that happened with him showed me who I was made of, you know? I don't think you don't know what it's like to be in those situations until you're in those situations. Like with him, he's definitely... like they're just, I mean, I pretty practically lived at a hospital for months. You know, I was doing my coaching calls in like the Aubon pan downstairs and like the, you know, while he was like going through all of this stuff, and I, you know, took care of him for a lot of those like few years, like constantly being on buses. Like people wouldn't realize, even I don't talk about it, as publicly because of him when it's happening. But like even in recent years, he lives in San Francisco. I live in California, I mean, in Los Angeles. And there have been many a times when I just like stop everything and have to get into a car and like meet him in an emergency room, you know? Mm-hmm. And it adds a different element to your life.
Yes.
You know, that, you know, like I said, there's nothing I wouldn't trade for him not having that situation, but being that is what it is, I definitely, it's made me a better person.
Mm-hmm. And I think you touched on something that's so important, that going back to your childhood and that was your normal. And I think that people, and I know for me and a lot of my friends, we went to an all private Christian school, and there was a lot of things happening behind closed doors that people just did not speak about at all. So it always looked like everybody had their stuff together. It was all perfect with a little bit like a bow on it. And a lot of kids broke. I mean, I broke. Like it just, because I think that when you're not able to vocalize what you're going through, or even, and sometimes I think when you're a kid, you can't like comprehend, that then comes out as you get older. But my question for you though is, how do you find the strength to be vulnerable in sharing about your life and what you've been through and all that bit with your audience?
Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's harder in certain areas than others. Mm-hmm. You know, I think around the stuff that happened with my childhood, I've mm-hmm. still haven't fully opened up to the extent I could about it because mm-hmm. my mom is still very much alive. Mm. And I know how much that would hurt her. Mm. And so it's always been like a delicate balance of talking about this thing that definitely affected me mm-hmm. And shaped me tremendously and that I've gotten help for. But, you know, talking about with my brother and stuff like that, we had some great conversations where I did explicitly ask permission from him. Mm-hmm. And so I got permission from him because I think that's a big thing. If your story involves other people that are alive and in your life, in a vulnerable way where you're sharing something that's also their story, I think, you know, getting permission is the best thing you can do. I definitely don't have my mother's permission. But like with Kenny, I got his permission. So it was great, you know, and then I was able to share more about that. And then for me, the things that happened to me, I think are really helpful to share.
Yeah.
And I feel very comfortable sharing those because I have full ownership yes. of my own stuff.
Yes.
And so I've been able to share a lot about my relationship with my body and my, you know, disordered eating and that kind of stuff and my own journey of learning how to love myself and gaining my self-worth and stuff like that because I own that. And mm-hmm. so I think it's really important to – I think one of the things that inspired me is because I've been coaching with women for so long, right? Mm-hmm. And I remembered it was maybe like 2 or 3 years into coaching
mm-hmm. –
that, you know, because the first couple years I was like just trying to be like so perfect and blah, blah, blah. And then you kind of like get comfortable with it. And now I'm like so comfortable. Like all the girls I coach with, they're like my homegirls. I know everything. But in first I was like trying to be, keep it so professional. And then at the third year, sometimes I would slip, right? Mm-hmm. And someone would say like, oh, like I've been feeling like this, da, da, da. And I'd be like, oh, girl, let me tell you a story. You know, and I would like just like be like, there was this one time where like this, da, 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 and I was there too. And they'd be like, oh my God, really? Like you felt this way? Like you did this, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, yeah, of course, you know, like, yeah, it's okay. And like, here's how we get through it, right? You know? And I started like realizing that. And then I'd be like, after I would say it, I'd feel in part of my head, I actually talked to some like earlier coaching clients when I was going through it. And I was like, do you like it when I tell you stories or do you feel like I'm taking the attention off of you? Mm. You know, because I don't want you to feel like I'm taking the attention off of you and trying to tell you my shit. But if it's helpful and they're like, no, like I love it when you tell me stories because it makes me feel less alone. It makes me feel like normal. It takes so much of the charge away and then we work through it. And I feel even more excited to hear how we're working through it because I know what it's like to be where I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really started shifting things for me because I was like, okay, this is actually, this isn't selfish. This is helping people. And I saw how more and more of my clients, when I opened up to them, I'm like, I feel like I'm very vulnerable online and like in this way. Mm-hmm. But like with my clients, I am like completely raw. Mm-hmm. Like they're like, I will like, there's no, cause I work with a lot of women through a lot of this trauma and a lot of this like core stuff. Mm-hmm. So my clients will know everything, you know? And because if it's relevant, obviously to what we're talking about, what we're working through, I don't hold back with them because I think we heal each other that way, mm-hmm. right? We heal each other by looking at each other and being like, okay, like, you know what it was like when your sister had stuff going on with her kidney. So you get what it's like when I'm in the emergency room with him and his colon, right? And then it's like, okay, I see you in a different way now because you get that. And so I think it's really important for more and more of us to share those things because there's so much healing in just the acknowledgement of I've been there. I've felt that. You're not alone in this experience. And then if you can then say, I've been there. I've felt that. You're not alone. And here's how I work through it. Yeah. And here's how, you know, I, you know, made it, I was able to be, turn some lemonade out of those lemons, yes. You know, then your ears are perked up. So I think that's why I like to be as vulnerable as possible with people, because I think that is, that heals if we're able to use that to teach.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I so agree with you, because I, again, that feeling of, or never wanting other women, people in the world to feel alone. And I think with so many people in this world, that should not even be a thing, but it is. And it's growing. And because I think that people feel isolated in their situation. So I applaud you for doing that, because I think that that's, again, it shows how strong you are and how confident you are in yourself to be able to do that. Because it can be tough to be raw and real, even if it's someone that you're, you know, servicing or coaching or whatnot. So I think that's incredible.
Thanks.
You're welcome. So where has there been thus far in your life a pivotal moment that has positively impacted you or made you see something differently, or you just will always remember?
Well, I think, obviously those two moments that I talked about were really pivotal moments, but I won't reuse any of those. But those were both very pivotal moments in my life that like shift everything. A more recent one that happened maybe like 5 years ago was, when I moved to LA, and I went through such a funk when I moved to LA, and it was like, I don't know what it was. I think it was one, like, not having, like, my community and my family, being in a different place. And I was giving up a lot of, like, kind of, like, I had established community and, like, in my work and stuff like that in New York. And I had most of my clients are on Skype and online. So I knew it didn't really matter. Like, there was only a couple in-person clients in New York. Even a lot of the girls that were in Manhattan, we do Skype sessions. Mm-hmm. So I was like, it's fine. They'll transfer to LA. But something happened when I moved to LA and, like, business took a dive. Mm-hmm. And I think it was probably just me. You know, it's a big thing, like a cross-country move. Like now, if I was going to do that kind of a big thing, I would plan for it. You know, I'd plan like, okay, you're probably not going to want to focus on your business for like 2 months while you get adjusted. So like, let's plan that in the business, you know. But I was younger and not as, you know, seasoned. And so business took a dive and I just started like really questioning everything. And you know, I had gotten a massive spiritual hit to move to LA, mm-hmm. and just followed like a spiritual hit that I got in a meditation. And so I was like, God, spirit, like y'all told me to come here. And I did the crazy thing and I just listened and up and moved and I just transplanted my whole life. And now you're leaving me hanging. And I'm like, what was this for? Why am I here? And like, yeah, so I had a moment and I had this session with some like spiritual therapist that my girlfriend recommended. Mm-hmm. And I will say, like, most of the session I was like, this is BS. I'm like not into this at all. Like, we were doing all sorts of crazy stuff. And like, so I was like, I mean, I'm very woo-woo, but I was just like, nah, I don't need to be like talked to an owl or something right now. And so I was like, this was a waste of money in a time when I didn't have that much money. And at the end of the session, we do this whole like ridiculous session, right? That like one of those sessions I'm like, I hope nobody sees this on like, it could be like a great YouTube video. People would love it. And then at the end of it, she was like, okay, so what did you learn? And I was like, I have no idea. Like, if I was supposed to get some clarity from this, no clue what's going on, you know? And she was like, can I be real with you? And I was like, oh, please, please make the last 15 minutes worth it. And she was like, if you had 3 kids, you wouldn't have the privilege of having your little, like, self crisis right now. You would have to just, like, get to work.
Yeah.
And she gave me like a little smackdown on it, right? And she was like, you're like, you are like not essentially saying, which is true. She was like, if you had kids or like, you know, something you were responsible of taking care of, mm-hmm. right now, you would just show up. Mm-hmm. You would have to show up. And she's like, why don't you love yourself enough to show up for you?
Mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because when I thought about that in that moment, like 1,000%, if I had a child that I had to feed, if I had a child whose like livelihood and lifestyle and school and all that stuff was on the line, mm-hmm. like I'd be hustling.
Yeah.
You know, I'd do whatever I had to take. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, because it was just me, little old me, I didn't have Carl at the time, you know? And so it's just me. I was like, well, I can suffer. I'll just suffer, you know? And it was such a, it was like a bucket of ice on my face. And that was needed. That was like, I'd say, you know, in relation to the other two was much, maybe a smaller moment. But it was a needed moment because I think that was like a moment where I really stepped into adulting, where I really stepped into responsible womanhood. Mm-hmm. And I had gotten, you know, my business had evolved so organically, mm-hmm. where I just like, I had this blog. It was just like a fun passion project. You know, people wanted me to coach them. I didn't like really plan on being a coach. You know, I went to school for it because people wanted me to coach them and I didn't feel comfortable coaching them until I went to school for it. So it was like this whole like kind of like, and then I just ended up on the TV show and it was like, I was just on the roller coaster ride, you know, showing up for it. And then it kind of came down to like the, you know, it was time for me to actually drive the car instead of just ride. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to drive, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that was a beautiful moment for me that sometimes I also now see myself having to instill in my clients sometimes, mm-hmm. where it's like, you have to like treat this, like you have to show up for this, mm-hmm. you know? And, for your life and all responsibilities as an adult and love yourself enough to take care of yourself. And to not like allow yourself to, we all have our own little like self sabotaging comfort blankets, you know, we're like, oh, you know, like they're just, we just like certain areas of our life or certain things where we just like allow stuff, or allow ourselves to like linger in areas that we don't need to be or we shouldn't be, you know, instead of just like taking care of business. And so that was something that was really pivotal for me that I really needed at that point in my life to just be like, oh, wow, it's like, it's not a joke anymore. Like you're not in college, like just writing a blog here. Like you're like a grown ass woman and you have responsibilities and you got to like show up for this.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I feel like that's a running theme, in your life and then in many other lives as well too, is just showing up. I think, and the concept of it, and I think what, that woman said, is just, it's so true thinking about it from that perspective, because there's a lot of times, and I so know this where, and I've talked to my friends about this in the creative industry, where you don't feel like showing up online, you don't feel like showing up for work, you don't feel like, you know, even like getting out of bed sometimes. And it's really easy for us to like make that decision of not showing up for us unless we are responsible for someone. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think that's it too. I work with a lot of spiritual entrepreneurs, right, that are mm-hmm. trying to like grow their coaching practices and stuff like that in my one-on-one stuff. And I get all the time, like, I don't want to do Instagram stories, right? I don't want to do it. And I'm like, okay, do you want to do this business or do you not want to do this business, right? Because you got to get online, you got to give some value, mm-hmm. right? And just like if you wanted to work a 9-to-5 job or whatever the job was, right? Like you have to go in at the time they ask you to go in. You have to do the task they want you to do. And it's like, it's not like you decide that you're going to help people. Money falls from the sky. You don't have to actually help the people, right? Like you got to help the people. You got to like show them what you can talk about. Show them what you can help them with. Like you got to put out stuff. And I think that's also like, you know, maybe a tangent, but like another thing that kind of goes on here where it's like when you're doing this on your own, it's like you are the engine.
Yes.
You are the engine. And it's different. Like if you have a regular job, that, which there's nothing wrong with that, right? There's nothing wrong with having that kind of a job. But if you have that kind of a job, then you have someone else, right? That's kind of giving you the parameters, giving you the structure, saying, come in at this time, do these tasks, come at this time, deciding what good work looks like. Okay, this is what good work looks like. You get in all your projects by Friday, right? Whatever. When you're by yourself, You're making all that up. You're going to make all that up. Okay? And no one's going to give you like a dirty look if you're like, if you show up 30 minutes to your laptop, right? Mm. But you're the one that's missing out on that 30 minutes of work. You know, no one's going to like call you into their office if you don't complete your projects by Friday, but you're the one that's like hurting yourself by not, you know, doing that. So it does. It requires a lot of adulting. Mm-hmm. If you want to do your own thing.
Yes, 100%. And I think too, with adulting, I don't know if you follow Letterfolk, but they have the funniest quotes on the letter boards about adulting. They're so good. Also, my therapist says, and they're hilarious too. Because there was one quote that was like, oh, well, adulting is just Googling everything, which is true. Like basically Googling your life.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Can I tell you though, on that alone, this is like when people work for me, that like the Google test is such a big thing because it's like, did you Google it before you asked me the question? If you Googled it and you were like, hey, I Googled it, I found X, Y, and Z, but I saw this question, fine.
Yeah.
But we live in a world where you should Google a question. I can't even, I could do a whole podcast on that. So it would be completely irrelevant to like anybody except people that wanted to work for me. But like, I feel like in general, if you like, yeah, you gotta be, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
It's so true. It's so true. And well, I think that's the other thing too, which again is probably a tangent, but we have so many things at our fingertips, right? Like we literally, everybody is, basically, like, if you were to look at, like, a solo entrepreneur, I mean, you literally, you have to teach yourself everything. And you are making it up as you go, and you're testing out everything. And it's, like, the fact that we have all this technology, all these things at our fingertips, it's, like, we should just be grabbing onto it for dear life. Like, we just, especially if you're hungry for something, if something's your passion.
So, yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You just gotta do it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I adore you. You, again, you've just dropped so many truth bombs and so many aha moments. And I hope that everyone who's listening just jots everything that you said down. I think it's so empowering, inspiring, and just in seeing what you do. And I can see why people love you as a coach. I think that, you know, it's so amazing for me to see just so many women doing some like really magical and wonderful things and just kind of planting the seed for success in other people's lives. And I think that just leaves such a legacy. So again, thank you so much for coming on this show and just,
oh my God, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Oh, and where can people find you?
So I'm at Cassandra Bodzak on Instagram, where I mostly live. I'm also at Cassandra Bodzak on TikTok, where I newly live. You can see lots of videos of my dog, Carl. mostly that. I'm Cassandra Bodzak TV on YouTube, and I do have a podcast as well that's called Practical Magic Musings.
Oh my God, and I even love the title. It's so good. Well, guys, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. I'll have all of Cassandra's information in the bio, and we hope you guys have an amazing night.
Bye.